G'day mates, it's B-Buster here. So before the episode begins, I would just like to say a huge thank you to Castbox for helping me make the Castbox original, Be Scared, which is produced along with Studio 71. Now, Castbox is the fastest growing, highest rated podcast app on both iOS and Android, and you can find all of your favourite podcasts there. Personally, I think Castbox is the best podcasting platform out there, and I hope you guys check it out because I think you'll be surprised at just how much variety they have and how user-friendly their app is. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening, and without further ado, let's begin. I found my old copy of my favourite childhood movie, And Something's Seriously Wrong With It, by Dopamine, Part 2. I didn't sleep Saturday night and went to work at 7 a.m. Sunday in a daze. I tried to talk to Jesse, but Mark exploded the minute I walked in the door. Jesse herded him into another room, but the walls are thin and I heard him screaming over and over. He was saying, I don't want any of you fuckers in my house anymore. I left the second my shift ended. Jesse stayed behind to work another double. At home, I drank an entire pot of coffee, but fell asleep anyway. I dreamed of baby Carolyn and woke up drenched in sweat. It was 6 in the evening. I showered and dressed and then made more coffee. I didn't check my phone or computer. I knew I'd look up William Hyde and didn't trust myself with whatever information I'd find. I still wanted to talk to Jesse, so at 10:30, I drove to the house, parked across the street and waited. Jesse finally emerged at 11:45, looking exhausted. Mark, he ran out after him.
Wait, you gotta see my car.
Mark loves building model cars and loves showing them off. If Jesse isn't available, he'll present his cars to the wall, in fact. But he'll speak loudly, making sure that I can hear. Jesse was suitably impressed as Mark showed off his model truck. Finally, he clapped Jesse on the back and darted back inside. Once the door shut, Jesse withered and shuffled down the street. I got out of my car and he noticed immediately. I could practically see him wavering, run or wait. But he's Jesse, so he didn't just wait. He walked over to my car.
Is this about yesterday?
Yeah. Jesse stared down at the asphalt, silent for so long that I didn't know what to think. Let's talk in the car. I got in. He dithered outside for several minutes. I thought he was going to run off, but finally, he slid into the passenger side, wiping his eyes. He drew a hitching breath and said,
I call them painted dreams. Before yesterday, they looked like actual paintings, not cartoons. I've had them as long as I can remember. It's not just Carolyn, it's pretty much everyone.
His voice broke. Dread and suffocating sadness mingled with horror. I was going insane only after 3 days, and he'd been having them every night, all his life.
What are they?
I don't know. Memories? Visions? He pressed himself against the window.
It's my fault. When I fell asleep the other night, I was dreaming it. What you saw with Carolyn, it must have been printed on the tape somehow or something.
Then everyone would have seen it, not just us. His voice shook.
Then, I don't know. You're my only friend and we're close. Maybe that's it.
I don't know. He bit his lip as his face crumpled.
I'm sorry. I wanted to comfort him, but didn't know how. Until this point, he'd been a great co-worker and casual friend. That he considered us close broke my heart. He took a deep breath, clearly struggling to calm himself down. "It's just the tape, right? You haven't seen it anywhere else." I hesitated, his voice immediately shrilled with panic. "Are you dreaming about it?" "Yes," I admitted. He leaned over, resting his elbows on his knees and covered his face. When he finally looked up, his face was swollen and blotchy. Did you see anything else?" That small, bone-thin creature with the glowing static skin filled my mind's eye. "Why? So, that's a yes then. Does it matter?" "Yes. If it comes back, don't listen to it." "But I didn't see..." He suddenly snapped. "You don't need to lie, all right?" Mortification replaced the upset, and he covered his face briefly before settling back into his seat. "You don't need to. Not to me." I apologized and asked, "Do you know what it is?" His internal struggle was almost palpable. "No, I'm not sure." "Did it ever talk to you?" "All the time, and I listened too." The horror must have been apparent on my face because he continued quickly. "Once, when I was a kid. It didn't work and I'm still paying for it." He paused. "I know you want to listen. I still do, too, but it's not worth it." I didn't answer. "You'll get used to the dreams and I'll help you. If you want. If you think I can. I mean, if you want support, I'm here." I heard him, but thoughts of him and Carolyn consumed me. The horror that they'd experienced, the pain they'd suffered. Anger surged through me, and it was heavy and electric. "You only dream about people you know. It's good because there's no mystery. You can see that they're okay, that they're safe. So are the people who hurt them. I know, but you can't change it or do anything about it. The dreams aren't evidence, so you have two choices. You can give in, give up your freedom and risk your life for revenge that isn't even yours. Or you can live with it." He exhaled slowly. "Here's the question that I had to ask. Is it harder to live as a witness than as a victim?" He kept talking, and I wasn't as attentive as I should have been and didn't catch his last sentence. I only sensed the tension after. "What?" I asked. He looked miserable. "I haven't had a painted dream since we watched that movie together." The implication wasn't lost. He'd transferred this curse to me, allegedly. The thought of enduring these dreams, not just about him and Carolyn, but everyone else too, it made me want to scream. But instead, I cried. Other than skittish shoulder tapping, Jesse's never touched me, so it was a shock when he pulled me into a hug. He tried to soothe me, but ended up weeping himself. And that made it much worse. All I could see was his 10-year-old self crying over a dead body in those lush, dreamy woods. I couldn't stand it, and I told him that it wasn't his fault, but I needed to be alone. I don't think he believed me, but I wasn't lying. And I don't blame him. I'm actually glad that he was a reprieve. I don't want to be that reprieve, but at least he's free. I went home and cried some more and slept. I had an animated dream, a painted dream of Jesse. He was older, 12 maybe, sitting in a dark barn. Shafts of sunlight spilled through holes in the roof, creating a soft spotlight. Dust motes drifted in the air like tiny fairies. "No." His child voice was choked with tears.
"If you don't, you'll find more."
A soft, familiar hiss issued from the shadows.
"And more and more. There'll always be more."
He shook his head violently.
"You're going to be like him. Every time he kills one, he comes closer. That's why he makes you watch, so that you'll become him."
Jesse screamed, "I'm not like him."
"You're close, though. You think about it. You dream about it. Soon, you'll want to do it."
A familiar, inhumanely thin shape flickered in the shadows. Not static this time, but living paint. Swirling swaths of rich oil color dancing all over. "No." Jesse shot to his feet. "I will never want to."
"That's a lie."
The painted phantom stepped in front of him. Sunlight made it breathlessly beautiful.
"And you know it."
The barn door creaked open, spilling soft light into the darkness. Tools glinted on the nearest wall. Pitchfork, axe, saws, shovels. The painted phantom melted into the shadows as a man entered. Blood and mud caked his naked body like he crawled out of a bog. That was a mental image that I didn't want. A murderer submerging himself like a crocodile until a victim came along. He pulled the axe out of the wall and went to Jesse, who looked up at him with mingled horror and defiance. I couldn't see the man's face. Sun hit the back of his head, casting his features into a stark blank shadow. He had hair like Jesse, though, coarse and black, falling in a haphazard wave down his neck. He put a large, muddy hand on Jesse's shoulder and steered him outside. Jesse looked back fearfully as the painted creature flickered in the darkness. The man slammed the door and Jesse began to scream.
"I was prettier then,"
hissed a soft voice in my ear.
"But that's because he sees beauty even when there is none. Not like you."
The static phantom stood at my side, regarding its multicolored doppelganger. When it spoke to me, it broke a paralysis that I hadn't even recognized. In these dreams, I'm a numb, invisible witness with no thoughts or feelings until I wake. Being dragged into sentience was like being doused in cold, slimy oil. The shock of it almost woke me up, catapulting me to an in-between space. I could see my room, but the barn's colorful walls replaced my own.
"Did you listen?"
The phantom's faint luminescence caused strange shadows to play across the blankets.
"Are you angry?"
I didn't find him. My throat was so dry that the words issued in a broken hiss. I didn't try.
"No one tries it first. So I'll show you. I'll help you."
It began to play with my hair. The small shocks and bursts of static stung my scalp. The sharp fingers dug into my skin and bored delicately into my skull. And then the phantom started to pull. It was both pain and relief, like draining a pressurized wound and pulling the last slimy vestiges of infection from the cavity. It came out in a wet, glittering rope. The blurring images flickered across it. Baby Carolyn, and the clown man, and all the hideous things that followed. Finally, with a soft, wet pop and a glorious release of pressure, the root of the rope detached and fell beside me. The spectre held the rope up for my inspection.
"Your dreams show you where to go. You just have to let them out."
It threw the rope across the room. Impossibly, fantastically, the rope spread and stretched, wider than my bed, wider than my room, wider than the barn. It crept up the walls and closed off overhead, forming a tunnel. Every surface, the walls, ground, and ceiling, played Carolyn's horrific abuse. An endless tunnel of cartoon horrors.
Don't be afraid.
The static creature touched my shoulder. Electricity snapped and popped.
Follow the path you made.
And suddenly, I was angry, enraged. Seeing these things was horrible, but Jesse was right. I was just a bystander. So how much worse must it have been for Carolyn? Poor Carolyn, abandoned with no family and no one to love her. Carolyn, who had to endure it and suffer the endless aftermath alone. Fury burned, eclipsing and finally extinguishing fear. I gave in and followed my path. Every image of Carolyn broke my heart, and every sight of the clown made me so mad that I could have thrown up or screamed. But neither of those were beneficial. Energy was beneficial. Speed was beneficial. So I redirected that energy and ran. Soon enough, a house appeared at the end of the tunnel. It had the threadbare carpet and stained walls. A battered poker and brush sat before a dark fireplace. The tunnel followed me, enveloping the entire house as I checked the rooms. The kitchen, bathroom, den, and finally, the familiar dreary bedroom. Even after all these years, a single lamp lit the room. An old man curled on the bed like a baby, tiny and withered. But as I drew closer, the clown face superimposed over his features, and I knew. I tiptoed back to the living room and grabbed the poker. He brutalized Carolyn, so I brutalized him. I made him bleed and break and squall. He was old and fragile, so I expected him to die quickly, but he didn't die at all. He just kept screaming, kept flailing, kept begging for his life. Finally, I gave up and hurled the bloody poker at the wall and stalked away. The static specter came loose like a flood and spilled over the clown. Slowly, it diminished the body. When nothing remained, the phantom bled back into itself.
"Go back,"
it said. The tunnel was blank now. Some of it was that empty grayness of a dead tube TV. Some of it was static, lighting my way home. I entered my room and saw myself sleeping restlessly. The room started to spin, and I woke up, alone in my bed in a dark room. Horror and disgust overwhelmed me, and I just wept for hours. The static creature returned eventually.
Did I really kill him?
I croaked.
Well, he died in his sleep, dreaming of you.
It's sick, but I actually felt much better after that. Well enough, at least, to ask another question.
Why me?
Curses are living things,
it answered.
Love and hate create them. Love and hate transfer them.
Well, who hates me?
No one. But lonely boys love easily.
This made me cry again, long past the point of exhaustion. When I finally finished, the phantom crawled down.
I have another name for you.
I wanted to tell it no, but I was too tired, already half asleep. It swept damp hair from my forehead.
Earl Koenig. Now rest.
Earl Koenig's name followed me into sleep. When I woke up a few hours later, I felt clean, purged with only the faintest memories of Carolyn's abuse. I didn't feel angry. I didn't even feel sad. Just cleansed. I went to work with a literal bounce in my step. I wasn't late, but Jesse was already there, working on a model truck with Mark. His warm composure shattered when he saw me. Mark noticed.
Does this shit have to fucking ruin everything?
He swept the model off the table. A small piece skidded across the lino as he stormed away. We waited in tense, painful silence, and finally, Jesse asked,
"So, how were you last night?"
I hesitated. Was he asking about the clown man? But how could he possibly know? So I took a chance and lied. I just didn't sleep. Jesse's face twisted.
Well, I'll leave you alone. Don't worry about doing anything today. Just relax if you can.
His words were uniquely heartbreaking. No one had ever helped me, but his first instinct was to actually help me. And what had I done in return? I kicked him out of my car for trying to comfort me. So I went over and hugged him. He returned it without hesitation, holding on like I was a life raft.
What the fuck?
Mark stood in the doorway, apoplectic.
Don't fucking do that shit in my fucking house, okay?
I stepped away quickly. It was just a hug, Jesse soothed. We would never disrespect you, and if that made you feel disrespected, we won't do it again. Your house, your rules, 100%. Watching Jesse calm Mark, seeing the empathy and understanding in every moment, made my heart hurt. The thought of his past, of his pain, sparked a burning, dangerous pressure in my chest. More anger. It kept building even after Carolyn found me. We played Go Fish for hours, with ridiculous cheating on both sides. Watching her silliness, her joy, it made me happy, but it didn't kill the rage. And that's okay. Because Jesse's last name is Koenig. I don't know who Earl is, but I can't wait to meet him in his dreams or otherwise.
G'day, mates. So, I just wanted to take a quick break before the second half of the story to thank all of you guys for listening to Be Scared. If you're a new listener, welcome to The Hive. And if you're a longtime fan, thanks for checking out the podcast. If you could please take a moment to do me a favor to rate and review the show, that would be a huge help. And if you have any stories that you would like to submit for future episodes, you can send them to my email at bish.busta@gmail.com. That's bish.busta@gmail.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and without further ado, here's the rest of the story.
Karen was uncharacteristically tired yesterday. I used the spare time to look up Earl Koenig. No hits beyond a jazz musician and a fairy tale, so after ensuring that he was busy building models with Mark, I looked up Jesse. His last name is Koenig, so I assumed Earl was his father, uncle, or grandfather. But that wasn't the case. Jesse's mother, Anna Koenig, went missing when she was 16 and Jesse was 2. Her disappearance made the news, and the article is still archived online. Men mentioned that Jesse's biological father, Anna's former foster parent, had been sentenced to 25 years for abusing numerous children. Anna herself was an orphan with no living relatives. After that, there's no mention of Jesse until his high school graduation announcement, dated 4 years ago, and then nothing after. Like I said, Jesse and I work for a non-profit that provides housing and in-home care for disabled adults. We work in the same house, and the last few days have been difficult. He had these dreams long before I did. When I started having them, he stopped and he blamed himself. I don't blame him, but It was impossible to reassure him while working because our other client, Mark, freaks out whenever he sees us talking. Jesse usually works doubles. He's one of our four male staff in an organization with a client base that is 70% male. But he's been training a new hire the past couple of weeks, and lo and behold, the new guy's permanent assignment is the swing shift at Mark and Carolyn's house. So, for maybe the fourth time since I started the job, Jesse and I got off work at the same time. He looked exhausted, which, to be honest, surprised me. With the dreams gone, he should have been sleeping better. Instead, he looked half dead. "Are you looking forward to time off for once?" I asked. He shook his head. "He's not going to last. I can already tell. But hopefully he quits fast. It'd be less disruptive for Mark." "Oh, that sucks," I said, mildly. "Not really. I hate being home." He seemed to regret his words instantly. "That sounds dramatic, I know. I'd rather be doing something that means something. And I don't want to do, well, alone. It's part of why this job works so well." I could tell by his body language that he was lying. I wondered what he was hiding, if he'd ever tell me or ever want to. He looked at me directly for the first time in hours with an overwhelming sadness that made me feel like I'd been punched. "Hey, take care. If you need anything, just call, okay?" It felt wrong to let him go and suffer alone yet again. "Well, why don't you hang out with me today? Minimize your meaningless downtime." He tried to smile, but his face crumpled. "I've done enough to you. You don't have to take care of me." But he stood there, waiting for me to answer. I don't know if it was right, and I don't feel the way that he does, although I easily could. He's suffered unimaginably his entire life and still came out a good man. Even now, with freedom from a literal curse, he has no peace because misplaced guilt is eating him alive. So I said, "Please, come home with me." And he did. When he undressed, I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to go through with it. Long, pitted scars wrapped around his chest and back. Seeing them made me want to cry. He looked uncertain, almost afraid, and it took everything that I had to keep calm at first. Afterward, we drifted off together as late afternoon waned into the evening. The dying light bled into a painted dream that I couldn't remember. I woke up crying, and the dream was already fading, leaving vague impressions. A warm light and soft darkness, a withered bundle in a shallow pit, and a boy, of course, a familiar dark-haired boy, weeping as an indescribable darkness crept toward him. Jesse was fast asleep, and he looked better. At the very least, that flat parlor had warmed somewhat. Electric dread crept through my body as I struggled to remember the dream. I couldn't hold still, but rather than wake Jesse, I got out of bed and went to the living room. The TV was on, showing nothing but flickering static. Propped against the screen was a tape. I haven't put the VHS player away, but I think it would have been there, even if I had. I hesitated. I wanted to watch it. I wanted to see the dream that I'd forgotten. But what if Jesse woke up?
"This happens when you can't remember."
Though expected, that slithering hiss made me shudder.
"Be careful. Dreams make far clearer paths."
I can't watch this," I said.
"You need to make your path now. You don't have time before you sleep again."
I obeyed, not from fear, but from excitement. I wanted to see what was next. I wanted to reignite the fury that had waned those past several hours. But mostly, I wanted to take care of Jesse. to take away whatever was still tormenting him. Partly to help him and partly to hear the third name, whatever it was. I put the tape into the player. A mad, chaotically brief triangle of bright colors and figures gave way to black, and then came a stylized title card. The Boy Who Was Too Good to Do Any Good, Chapter 1. Blackness cut to the rich, overwhelming color of an animated film. A deep tangerine twilight suffused a small grove. Gnats flitted about, sparkling like tiny golden stars. A bat swooped down, ruffling the hair of a very small boy. Jesse, of 4 or 5 at most. Enormous dark eyes sparkled with tears. Dull tear tracks streaked down his face. He was tied between 2 trees, directly in front of a shallow pit. Raw red welts covered his body. Droplets of blood bloomed from the wounds and dripped into the wildflowers beneath. In the pit lay a desiccated, a dismembered body with a bashed-in head. Discolored skin wrapped the limbs like an old paper. A long black hair straggled from the scalp, glimmering in the waning sun. The light softened, creating a red-orange watercolor haze that gave way to blue evening. Jesse's lip quivered. More tears rolled down his face, and fat droplets twinkled like diamonds. The dark figure coalesced in the twilight, a tall, brawny man with thick black hair and a face obscured by shadows. He stopped several feet behind Jesse and waited as the night deepened. Stars blinked to life overhead in a night sky swirled with a dozen shades of blue and purple. The crickets began to sing. Jesse wept as his wounds dripped, watering the ground with tears and blood. The last pale hint of daylight on the horizon finally faded, giving way to full night. Suddenly, with a dry rattle, the bones in the pit shuddered. The skull rolled, jaw yawning open. Jesse flailed, but the ropes held him securely in place. A shadow gathered at the other end of the grove, growing among painted pines and rustling grass. Darkness beyond darkness grew and stretched into a black figure. It gilded silently to the pit, and overhead, the stars winked out and deliriously lovely night sky faded to black. That awful shadow reared up, spreading above the trees as if reaching for the missing stars. A faceless giant with massive cruel horns peered over the trees. The bones clacked and jutted. They knit themselves together in unnatural ways, leaving vital pieces behind. Dry black hair swung around its mummified face. The jaws continued to stretch and click, tearing the delicate flesh off its cheeks. The shadow came into the grove and halted before the pit. The faceless man stood, and grass rustled under his feet as he strode to Jesse with a knife. He struck, and Jesse shrieked and thrashed. The man cut his bonds and threw him into the pit. And then he knelt at the edge and just watched. The corpse crawled at Jesse, stopping inches short of his cheek. Empty sockets radiated darkness, then pressed its lipless mouth to his forehead, then drew back and picked up a leftover limb. A cruel, broken point of bone glinted in the moonlight. It crossed the pit and jabbed the bone upward, not toward the shadow, but to the faceless man. Jesse watched in horror. Moonlight skin and bright eyes imbued him with a dreamy inner light at stark odds with the dull, withered corpse. It kept jabbing the limb at the man, sharp point dancing a mere foot from his face. The faceless man ignored him, looking across at the horned shadow.
Jesse.
His deep, maternal voice was a bare register short of a croak.
Listen to me. Pick her up and take her to it.
The man leaned forward, dirt crumbling under his large hands. Even without a face, his anger, his hatred was palpable.
Give her over.
Jesse began to hyperventilate, eyes flickering between the faceless man and the poor corpse weakly brandishing its own detached leg. He stared at it with haunted, horrified eyes, then looked up.
Now,
the faceless man said. Jesse grabbed the bone and stabbed the man's eye. It was suddenly visible in the impenetrable shadows of its face, a burning cloudy yellow. He roared and pulled it out. Blood gushed from the socket. The horned shadow spilled into the pit, sliding over the corpse and pulling it back. Jesse immediately latched onto those withered hands, struggling to drag the poor creature back. It desperately dug its fingers into Jesse's arms, and for a moment, it looked like they might win. But then, the shadow gave a great heave. The corpse's hands convulsed, scoring Jesse's skin from elbow to palm as it disappeared into the shadow. The darkness receded like a silent tide. The forest and stars slowly returned in its wake. The faceless man screamed furiously and leapt into the pit. He beat Jesse viciously with the limb, laying wound upon wound over the raw welts. Jesse quickly lost consciousness. When he stopped moving, the man dropped the bone, hauled himself out of the pit and walked away, fading into myriads of shades of blue and purple darkness. The film cut to black. "You've painted dreams about me?" Jesse's broken voice shattered the silence. He stood in the doorway, eyes wide and dark, and then he backed away. I followed him, repeating mindless apologies, and he shrugged into his clothes without another word. I tentatively approached his arm, and he pulled me in briefly as if for a hug, but quickly moved away. I begged him to stay, but he wouldn't have it. I can't. He snatched his car keys off the nightstand. I'm never going to get away from this. I've done enough to you. Don't do anything for me. I can't. His voice broke. I can't. I sat in the darkness for a while before the static phantom flickered into being.
I need you to sleep now.
It moved forward until we were face to face and slid its hand around my face. Sharp electric static stung my cheeks.
Be angry. I'll do the rest.
I wasn't tired, but I didn't care. Is that faceless fucker Earl Koenig?
It is.
I surrendered easily. Rage consumed me as thoroughly as that alien darkness had consumed the forest. Soon, I sat limp on the carpet while the static specter pulled wet, gleaming ropes from my head. Ropes covered in moving pictures of Jesse's horrific upbringing. And the pile of cords shimmered like intestines. It shifted suddenly, snaking across the room. It tapped the carpet experimentally, then plunged through the floor as if through water. What is it doing? I asked.
If you make a large tunnel, he'll follow you. A small tunnel keeps him at bay.
But I'm going to kill him, I said. The rope burrow widened into a perfect round hole. I peered in and shivered. At the other end was light, the size of a dime. The specter looped the shimmering rope around its hands and sat at the edge. It looked absurdly like a fisherman at an ice hole. I hesitated. At the bottom of the tunnel looked so far away. But that didn't matter. This was a dream, and even if it wasn't, I was too angry to care. That anger propelled me. I grabbed the rope and descended. The tunnel functioned as a massive cylindrical screen, silently replaying every painted nightmare I'd had of Jesse, and several I hadn't. Some I could never have imagined. Stag-headed monsters and men like Carolyn's sadistic clown, blood and beatings, dismembered children and skinned bodies writhing weakly under a burning sun. Some of it made me sick. Mostly, though, it stoked that endless consuming rage. This wasn't just for Jesse. This was for dozens of victims. People who were gone. People that I would never know. People who had no one to fight for them. No one to remember. I reached the end of the tunnel. The rope dangled several feet above a neat cartoon carpet. I let go and dropped into the middle of a dreamily animated apartment. A lamplight cast soft yellow halos. And judging by the size of the layout, It was a simple one-bedroom. Muted green houseplants rested on the sills. An ancient smiling terrier snored on a cheap recliner. Curiously, the sofa was made up like a bed with a comforter and pillow. Something clinked in the kitchen and I froze. And then remembered that no one could see me and went over to look. The breath, it went out of me. It was Jesse. Even in animated form, he looked puffy-eyed and miserable, with the tired, shuffling gait of a much older man. He ladled soup into a bowl, slammed a spoon into the broth, and then covered his eyes and leaned against the counter. White curls of steam drifted lazily upward. Once he composed himself, he took the bowl to the bedroom. The rhythmic hiss of breathing apparatus filled the room. A single bed sat by the window. Jesse set the bowl on a side table and dragged a folding chair toward the bed. He stirred the soup and brown broth teemed with bright vegetables. I tiptoed in and peered over his shoulder. A man, tall and broad once, badly withered now, lay in the bed. Sparse black hair lay around his sallow face like an anti-halo. Even in illness, his face was remarkable. In better health, this would have been a strikingly handsome man. Half-opened eyelids revealed an ugly concave scar on the left and single glassy iris on the right. That eye flicked toward Jesse and then to me. He smiled. The cracked lips split and bled. "What?" Jesse asked, brusquely. He tried to spoon broth into the old man's mouth, but it only dribbled out of his grin. I inched nervously to the foot of the bed, and the man's eyes tracked me. Jesse noticed. "What are you looking at?" Suddenly, in the middle of this unremarkable painted dream, Earl Koenig's yellow eye flashed a hideous amber red. Something ghastly erupted from his skin, a deformed reptilian nightmare coated in half-luminescent weeping sores. It dragged itself out of the body and stretched, releasing a low growling sigh. The old man released low chuffing laughter. "What are you doing?" Jesse looked around, clearly alarmed. "Who's here?" The monster crawled to the edge of the bed, growing with every step as the room changed. The furniture warped, casting twisted shadows along swiftly stretched walls. Frantic layers of red and orange light bloomed, turning the room into a nightmare. The monster grinned, the skin rolled up past its teeth, a curling motion, strangely hypnotic. The room's red light reflected off discolored fangs. I might have stood there, mesmerized forever, but it swiped me. My skin tore open, spattering gem-like drops of blood across the carpet. Fiery pain exploded. I staggered backward toward a door that was somehow much farther away than it should have been. The demon dropped to the floor, making the entire apartment quake. Saliva pooled between its teeth, dripping in long, glistening strings.
"Will you listen?"
Its deep snarl rumbled through my chest, making my bones hum. For an awful minute, I thought my rib cage would crack open. Jesse was panicking.
"Will you listen? Where are you?"
The old man laughed weakly as the demon grinned. I turned and ran. The doorway looked like a postage stamp. It might have been a million miles away at this point. Pain clawed up my insides and spread. I imagined black, weeping wounds spidering inside, splitting my organs into pieces. I lost my balance and fell as the demon approached, exuding blistering heat. My vision swam, throwing the room into further chaos. Jesse bolted. As he crossed the threshold, the door suddenly veered toward me. I grabbed the frame and pulled, just as the demon wrapped a massive paw around my ankle. In the softly shadowed ball, a static figure flickered to life and charged. The monster released me in shock. I staggered to my feet and stumbled to the living room. Behind me, the demon struggled with laughter.
"There you are, Juliana. Why do..."
He cut off, roaring in rage and pain. The glistening rope dangled from a hole, a full 3 feet over my head. I swiped for it weakly, missing by several inches. The floor shook under my feet. Warmth exploded from the hallway, intensifying quickly into painful heat. I jumped and swiped, catching the rope in one hand, right as the demon burst in wildly. He reached up and swatted the static phantom's face, slicing it open. It flew through the air, trailing a delirious burst of multicolored blood, of paint, and hit the opposite wall. I crawled up the rope, and the tunnel continued to play Jesse's Technicolor horrors, hideously bright and maddeningly lovely. Below me, the monster's fiery eye peered into the tunnel. It pulled back for a moment, and I thought it was gone, that the tunnel would close and I would be safe. But then it punched upward, shattering the screen. It clawed its way after me, swiping all the while. I swung madly to avoid its massive claws. I don't know how I did it. Maybe because he's still weak, is still effectively bedbound, but I made it to my apartment, to my gloriously normal, real-life apartment, and pulled the rope up. Now, the beast snapped its teeth, jaw closing inches from my hand as the tunnel folded in on itself, leaving nothing but the carpet. I tapped the floor, quickly jerking my hand back. It felt too warm and solid. I fell back. A rotted, burning pain pulsed through my body. I rolled over and saw a massive blood stain on the carpet. I looked down, panicking, and my shirt was soaked with blood. I pulled it up to see. The 3 deep, ragged wounds scored my stomach. Small blisters dotted the surrounding skin. Heavy pounding exploded through the room. I glanced feverishly around for the monster, but no. It was just the door. Someone was knocking at the door. It was Jesse, of course, and he fell apart when he saw me, barely managing to guide me to the couch.
"I told you not to do anything for me. I told you not to do anything for me,"
he kept repeating. He called 911 and followed the ambulance to the hospital. I didn't wake till late this morning. He was in the waiting area, and they wouldn't let him in the room because we weren't related, but relented when I asked. He's angry at me, angry enough that he cried even. He wouldn't leave, though. He wouldn't talk, but at least he stayed, I guess. I haven't seen my static phantom, Juliana, the demon called her that. And this terrifies me because I need her more than I ever knew. She was a gatekeeper or something. She gave me names and made sure dreams were focused, results orientated, as it were. But this isn't the case anymore. Last night, I had painted dreams of everyone around me. Paramedics, nurses, doctors, the blurry faces bustling through the hall. An incredible array of pain and horror, perversely portrayed through the most innocent of mediums. And no names, no starting point, no focus. The doctor discharged me this afternoon, and Jesse took me to my apartment, ran home to get his dog, and came right back. They're sleeping on my couch right now. I know that we're not done with this. Dreams aside, I still hurt. From my toes to the crown of my head, I feel like I'm burning. For another, the entire apartment, the air, the walls, and even the floor, it's too hot. When Jesse finally wakes, we'll talk, and I hope that there's something that we can do. It'll probably be the last thing that I do, but I need to get him away from El Koenig for good.
G'day mates, it's Bee Buster here. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Bee Scared podcast. And please, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode too. Also, it would be much appreciated if you could share this new podcast with your friends and family, and on social media too. Thanks again for listening, guys, and I'll see you mates in the next one.